this concept called an economic hedge, which is not a real hedge. It's hedginess. And so we've seen what hedginess leads to, a supposed hedge that actually magnifies the loss instead of reducing the loss. And they want that to be permissible under the Volcker Rule. In other words, they want the Volcker Rule to be useless and allow them to do exactly what was done. And indeed, eventually, J.P. Morgan, through Jamie Dimon, at this hearing, testified that he opposes any Volcker Rule. And he wants there to be no limits on the financial derivatives that they get to speculate in.
Well, in a minute, we're actually going to play the Jack Reed Q&A with Dimon.
And if you want to hear that, you can go to Letters in Politics on iTunes. That's where he said it was available. I don't know. Some of them are doing SoundCloud, which makes it available through Facebook or something. You could find it if you look. Thanks for listening. Opinions of those of the speaker. That was William Black and Mitch Jezrich dissecting a little bit of Jamie Dimon's appearance before the Senate, and he's coming back to talk to the House, too, unless he resigns in the meantime. Oh, well. Cheers. Have a good afternoon. There's some things going on around town, including an Occupy event, which I haven't been able to nail down. Maybe somebody who's listening can call in, or Occupy the Airwaves folks, who were preempted last week because of power outage in downtown, it turns out. Maybe they'll have chapter and verse on that, too. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
folks, and welcome to the June 16, 2012 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, and also streamed worldwide at weft.org. And as always, I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed during this hour of programming are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WEFT's management, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, call area code 217-328-2295. That's 328-2295. And this hour of programming is being brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE, celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. Bob?
All right. Thanks, Tom. I'm your host, Bob Pelesny, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us. And later in the show, during the Labor Hour Cultural Corner, Tom's poem for this week from his book, Which Way Is Oz, is titled A Father's Love. And that'll be it of the regular hosts in here today. But the Illinois World Labor Hour does want to send out some special condolences to Illinois World Labor Hour founder Bill Gorell. His father passed away the other day. And
it was on Thursday at Carl Clinic.
Carl Clinic. He was 93 years old. And visitation is tomorrow, and the funeral is Monday, and there's details in the lengthy obituary in today's obituary. So anyway, we do send our thoughts out to Bill and his entire family, and wish them all well. So anyway, on with the show. David Johnson is, I believe, on vacation this week, and Pat Simpson is at the Jobs with Justice meeting. So it's me and Tom holding down the fort. We'll have some special guests here during the second half hour. Leighton Christensen and Alec Cooney will be here from the International Socialist Organization. So we'll be talking to them about a conference going on up in Chicago in a couple weeks. So anyway, now here's Tom to kick off this week's edition with Workers' Interest News.
Currently, people in the 61821 and 61822 zip codes go to Champaign's Mattis Avenue post office to pick up held mail and collect parcels that couldn't be delivered. However, beginning Monday, June 18th, those services will be conducted at Champaign's North Neal Street Post Office. The planned expansion of the U.S. Postal Service's processing and distribution facility on Mattis Avenue is making it necessary for some postal operations to move back downtown. Also on Monday, all mail delivered by city or rural carriers in Champaign will be handled from the Neal Street Post Office. Presently, 53 of the 71 Champaign routes operate from the Neal Street Post Office, and the other 18 operate from the Mattis Avenue office. But beginning Monday, all the routes will operate from the downtown post office. The Mattis office at 2001 North Mattis Avenue will continue to have retail and passport services, and post office box services will remain unchanged. According to Jason Stalter, Champaign's acting postmaster, the Postal Service still refers to the Mattis Avenue facility as the main post office for Champaign, but it's conceivable that that could change soon with the repositioning and rededicating of the floor space at the Mattis office.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Actually, I think I'll piggyback on that story because Dave Johnson sent me a email during the week here, and it's a talking about a hunger strike to save the Postal Service. This is going to go on June 25th to 28th in Washington, D.C. and across the nation. It says, Congress, stop starving the Postal Service. Repeal the pre-funding mandate, refund the pension surplus, and talking to the Postmaster General, suspend the closures and cuts. It says America's Postal Service is being starved to death. A 2006 congressional mandate forces the U.S. Postal Service to pre-fund retiree health benefits 75 years in advance. 10% of the postal budget, or $5.5 billion each year, goes to pre-fund benefits for people who aren't even born yet. Not only would the Postal Service have been profitable without the mandate, the U.S. Postal Service has also overpaid tens of billions into two pension funds. It says here, not the internet, not private competition, not the recession. Congress is killing the Postal Service. Corporate interests working through their friends in Congress want to undermine the U.S. Postal Service, bust the unions, then privatize it. And it says here, we will not stand by as our beloved Postal Service is destroyed. A group of postal patrons and postal workers will declare a hunger strike the week of June 25th in Washington, D.C. We will shame Congress and denounce the Postmaster General. We will engage in dramatic actions in the halls of Congress and at the U.S. Postal Service headquarters to raise public awareness and turn up the heat on decision makers. We invite all who care about our national treasure, enshrined in the Constitution, serving over 150 million households and businesses 6 days a week, providing universal mail services at reasonable uniform rates, to join, endorse, and otherwise support our hunger strike in Washington, D.C. or in their local area. You can contact Communities and Postal Workers United. Website is www.cpwunited.com. And there's an email for that, cpwunited1@gmail.com. And so that's a hunger strike to save the Postal Service there. And interesting stuff. That's going to go on June 25th to the 28th in Washington, D.C. and across the nation.
All right. Get a point across somehow.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Hey, school's out, and there are a lot of teenagers who want to utilize their summer breaks by working and earning and saving some money. However, less than 3 in 10 American teenagers now actually hold jobs, such as operating cash registers or mowing lawns or busing restaurant tables from June to August. The decline of job availability for teens has been particularly sharp since the year 2000, with employment for 16 to 19-year-olds currently at its lowest level since World War II. And according to a projection by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, teen employment is unlikely to return to pre-recession levels at any time soon. The decline is especially troubling to teens for whom college may be out of reach, leaving them increasingly idle and with few options to earn wages and gain job experience. Older workers, immigrants, and debt-laden college graduates are taking away the lower-skilled jobs as they struggle to find their own jobs in the weak economy. Overall, more than 44% of teens who want summer jobs just don't get them or work a lot fewer hours than they actually want to. Economists are saying teens who are not getting jobs are often those who could use them the most, since many are not moving on to a higher education. And Bob?
Thanks, Tom. Here's a local story. Most of this information came out of the News Gazette here in the last couple of days, and we've reported on Flexengate, Guardian West over there in Urbana, previously on this program, and there were some meetings and stuff a while back. The United Auto Workers organized a rally in Urbana back in March in an effort to unionize about 320 laborers there. Anyway, Flexengate is facing $57,000 in fines after OSHA, the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, found serious violations affecting the workers at the Urbana plant. OSHA spokeswoman on Thursday said that workers at the company's Urbana plant, known as Guardian West, were exposed to dangerous chemicals and did not receive proper training, examinations, and monitoring from their employer. Flexengate Corporation is owned by Champaign resident Shahid Khan, is headquartered in Urbana, and is an international manufacturer of bumpers and other parts for the automotive industry. The company employs more than 12,000 people at 50 different manufacturing and 9 product development and engineering facilities throughout the United States, Canada, Mexico, Argentina, Brazil, and Spain. The Urbana plant was the only facility cited by OSHA on Thursday. OSHA cited them with 9 violations. All were classified as serious, which occurs when there is a substantial probability that death or serious physical harm could result from a hazard about which the employer knew or should have known. 4 of the 9 cite inadequate medical surveillance for workers performing decorative plating operations with regard to chromium and chromic acid exposure. It says here, chromium produces small dust particles that, when breathed, can be dangerous to your health. The chemical can irritate or damage workers' noses, throats, and lungs, according to OSHA, and may cause lung cancer if inhaled at high levels. Also part of the problem, OSHA said, was that Flexengate did not adequately communicate training and hazards to its employees. The plant has a high concentration of Congolese workers whose native language is French, and OSHA says means you have to provide that training in other languages if that's the situation with your workers. So anyway, that's a report just came out this week on the Flexengate Guardian West plant over there in Urbana.
Yeah, they've had some controversial news coming out of there in the recent past.
Yeah, it's been an ongoing story here for several months. Say, you know, Dave Johnson's reported on it previously on the show.
I've done one or two stories on it.
Right. So, you know, OSHA's getting involved there, and hopefully they can clean up some of the infractions over there, get better training for their employees.
Quit killing their employees.
It can lead to lung cancer and stuff like that. So hopefully better training, and hopefully they can clean up and get some of that chromium out of there so it wouldn't be so dangerous to their workers. So.
Oh, just 2 months after Yahoo announced it would be cutting 2,000 jobs worldwide, or roughly 14% of its staff, the Yahoo office in the University of Illinois Research Park is adding 15 new software engineering jobs. The local office, which works on Yahoo's data processing infrastructure, did not lose any jobs at all as a result of the major cuts. This is the second time in the last 6 months that the local Yahoo office has sought to fill new positions. It was last December when the Yahoo office, which employed 80 to 85 software engineers, sought to hire 6 to 9 more employees and was very quickly successful in recruiting them.
Thanks, Tom. Paul Muth did a story during news from Neptune about the Chicago Teachers Union up there in Chicago Public Schools. I got a story here. It says that after 4 days of ballot counting, the Chicago Teachers Union announced Tuesday that 90% of Chicago Teachers Union members voted to authorize their leaders to call a strike if negotiations continue to go badly. It says an overwhelming 92% of the membership voted, and in a resounding display of unity, 98% of those voting authorized the strike. It says we've been pushed and pushed and pushed, and finally we get a chance to push back, says a CTU activist as she counted strike authorization ballots this week. And teachers are angry over large classes, too few social workers and teachers' aides, a deadening of curriculum increasingly tailored to standardized tests, and a quarter of all schools lacking a library. They are angry at an unelected Board of Education demonizing them as adversaries. They're angry that the board, ignoring the pleas of parents and teachers, has systematically moved closed schools and reopened them as privatized charters with a non-union, at-will workforce, and policies that punish children with learning disabilities. English language learners and those with difficulties at home that impede their test-taking abilities. And it says teachers are angry at Mayor Rahm Emanuel, a Democrat, for imposing unpaid work on them. He's pushed a 7-hour school day plus 10 extra teaching days with no additional compensation, heaping more on top of their already heavy workload. It says an April 2012 University of Illinois study found that teachers work an average of 58-hour work weeks. So anyway, they said that there was a high bar to cross because the teachers union, Illinois legislatures pushed by Mayor Emanuel and Democratic Speaker of the House Michael Madigan passed a law last June that imposed the unprecedented requirement that strike authorization requires 75% of all CTU members to vote yes. The previous standard was 50% plus one vote. Under Illinois law, members who did not vote would count as no votes. But as I stated, the strike vote was overwhelmingly in favor of it. 98% of those voting authorized the strike. However, Paul Muth found an article here, and it says here that the second largest union ratifies the new contract. The SEIU, which is the second largest union up there in the Chicago public school system, has ratified the new contract. So we'll have to stay tuned to that because it seems like SEIU may have ratified the contract up there, but the CTU, the Chicago Teachers Union, did not, or is mainly leaning towards a strike right now. So we'll see how that progresses during the summer. Some of this will take effect. The actual contract expires June 30th. But the strike would not start until the first day of classes for most schools, September 4th. So anyway, stay tuned for that. I think we'll go to a little bit of, Workers Independent News right here, and then we'll be back shortly with, Tom's poem.
To win the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Jesse Russell. Providence, Rhode Island was the scene for the 10th annual Netroots Nation, a gathering of progressive organizations, legislative aides, and independent online media. This year's Netroots started off with a heavy reflection on the recall race of Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, but ended with a sense of perspective and a muddied but well-lit path forward. Van Jones gave the closing keynote address, and he said the biggest success in Wisconsin was the Wisconsinites on the ground.
The local forces fought beautifully. The local forces fought well. The local forces stood up. The local forces. They created a miracle. They turned a national breakdown into a potential national breakthrough on their own. The labor forces, and let's not forget that the African American and Latino community, especially in Milwaukee, exceeded every expectation and stood up. The local forces.
Where the movement failed, Jones said, was on the national level.
There were some exceptions, but the civil rights establishment never showed up in large numbers. There were exceptions, but the environmental movement never showed up in large numbers. There were exceptions, but the women's movement, the national Democrats, none of us showed up in large numbers. We saw it, we observed it, we munched the popcorn, but we didn't jump into the screen. And if we didn't like the way we felt waking up in June with that outcome in that one state, then it gives us a sense of how we might feel in November if we let the same thing go down in the swing states.
Jones said the last 4 years there was a president willing to be moved, but not a movement willing to push. He noted that only started to change with the arrival of Occupy Wall Street.
You had arguably the right president, but you had the wrong movement in the streets for two, almost 3 years. The people who were marching in America were the Tea Party. The movement, the big movement in America, was not your movement, but a movement that stands for the opposite of everything that you believe. And so you had the right president, arguably, but you definitely had the wrong movement. And until Occupy Wall Street came along, we were really screwed.
He said a win for the Tea Party in November would be rewarding 4 years of some of the most un-American behavior this country has seen in decades.
They have a wrecking ball agenda. They've taken a wrecking ball. They want to paint it red, white, and blue, call it patriotism, and smash down every American institution our parents and our grandparents fought for. That's what they want to do. That's who they are. And they're proud of it. They're not hiding it.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
And we're back. You are listening to the Illinois World Labor Hour here on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM and streaming at WEFT.org. And we've come to that part of the program. It's the Labor Hour Cultural Corner, and Tom's poem for this week from his book Which Way Is Oz is titled A Father's Love.
Of all the heroes that I knew, my father was the best. Of all the soldiers there to march, he stood above the rest. I flew the nest when I was young and left my father's care, but every time I needed him, my dad was always there. With playwrights and politicians, I supped in younger days, wandering a land in turbulence, seeking the muses' ways. I learned to write and draw and paint and take a photo clear, and though I wandered far away, Dad's love was always near. Milton and Goethe and Plato and many another book never could teach me like my dad taught me to bait a hook. Of all the wise men who taught me, my father stood above, because he was the only one who taught with a father's love. A Father's Love was written in Arlington, Vermont in September of 1995. Actually, I wrote it in the front yard of Norman Rockwell's house, and was brought to you live today, June 16, 2012, here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois. Happy Father's Day to all you dads.
There you go. Thanks, Tom. A couple of public service announcements. As always, we want to plug our co-host, David Johnson and Jim Iman. They do Labor's View TV show Sunday, every Sunday, on local cable channel 6, Labor's View TV at 4 o'clock Sunday afternoons. Great stuff on that program, as always, every Sunday. And want to mention a few things here. There's a Juneteenth family bike ride going on Tuesday, June 19th, from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. They'll be riding their bikes from the Don Moyers Boys and Girls Club to Randolph Street Community Garden. You can celebrate freedom and promote family fun biking. It says to wear comfortable clothes, bring water, and participate in cultural performances at the garden.
Definitely bring water. It's going to be hot.
Yeah, it's hot out there today. And a couple other things going on. There's a benefit concert for WEFT 90.1 FM. We got our summer bluegrass kickoff going on next Friday, June 22nd at 7 p.m. That's going to be live at the Rose Bowl Tavern. 7 p.m., the Prairie Dogs. 8 p.m., Black Ridge Road. 9 p.m., they're going to have Corn Desert Ramblers. And 10 p.m., they're going to have Open Bluegrass Jam with many of those same performers playing. And they're inviting you to bring your own instruments and sit in for the Open Bluegrass Jam. That's next Friday night, 7 p.m. at the Rose Bowl. It's a benefit concert for WEFT 90.1 FM. Also, announced in a couple weeks from now, WEFT is a co-sponsor and MC of the 2002 Champaign Blues Brews and Barbecue Festival. That's going to go on Friday, June 29th and Saturday, June 30th. This year, the event will be held around the corner from WEFT on Walnut and Main Street in downtown Champaign. And for more information, you can go to bluesbrewsandbbqfest.com. And we'll be out there. A lot of good blues going on. A lot of the clubs and venues in downtown Champaign are going to be having some music during the day and in the evenings. Lots of great performers going to be there. So anyway, we're going to go to a quick little bit here from Hightower Radio for this week. And then we'll come back to, I think, a quick musical selection and be back with our guests. So stay tuned.
Scott Walker wins Wisconsin, screamed headlines across the country after the labor-bashing incumbent governor hung on to his job in the June 5th recall election. Well, yes, but no. Walker will get to stay in office for the rest of his term, but he did not win the election. Money did. This was a victory for the Citizens United edict issued 2 years ago by a 5-man corporatist majority on the Supreme Court. Their anti-democracy ruling opened the door for unlimited sums of corporate cash to barge into our national, state, and local elections and take charge. Walker is the first ugly sprouting of that alien seed. He sacked up some $30 million from corporate interests, nearly 8 times the money that his Democratic opponent had to spend, and 2/3 of Walker's stockpile came from out-of-state interests. Bob Perry, for example, an anti-labor, anti-government Texas tycoon, put more than $500,000 into his Wisconsin soulmate's campaign. Likewise, the far-out DeVos family from the Amway fortune gave $250,000, as did Las Vegas casino baron Sheldon Adelson. Then came the insidious, secretive, outside campaigns that the Supremes green-lighted, allowing corporations to dump mountains of their cash into elections. The multi-billionaire laissez-fairyland Koch brothers, for example, shoved at least $3 million behind Walker, practically all of which went to vituperously negative attacks on his opponent. This is Jim Hightower saying, so, some victory. Honest conservatives might take cheer that Walker still clings to the governor's chair, but there can be no joy in the fact that money rules. That's the lesson of this election, and that's the real fight. To join it, go to Public Citizens Grassroots Rebellion. Go to www.democracyisforpeople.org. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
And thanks to Jim Hightower for his witty commentary as he comes through every week for us here. Going to play a quick song here from the Cashbox Kings. They were in town the other day playing at the Cowboy Monkey, and they got a song called Default Boogie. Cashbox Kings doing the Default Boogie because the bankers took their home. So anyway, we're here. We got two special guests in the studio with us this week, Leighton Christensen and Alex Cooney from, they both represent International Socialist Organization here locally. And they're here to talk about a big conference that's going to be going on up in Chicago in a couple weeks. So gentlemen, why don't you kick it off with some information about the conference and whatnot?
Well, this is the International Socialist Organization's national conference. Each year there's about 1,500 activists there from around the country. It's going to be from June 28th through July 1st at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Chicago. That's right up near O'Hare. And there's going to be 4 days with talks and speakers. People from all over the country and all over the world are going to be there giving talks. And just some of the, to highlight some of the names, Glenn Greenwald, columnist for Salon.com, is going to be giving a talk on opposing the U.S. surveillance state. The economist Richard Wolff is going to be giving a talk on alternatives to capitalism. Boots Riley will be there, formerly of hip-hop group The Coup, and currently with he currently is in Street Sweeper Social Club along with Tom Morello. And so those are just some of the highlights, and I'll let Layton talk a little bit more about the conference now.
Thanks, Alex. If listeners want to boot up their internet, if they don't already have it up and they're not streaming, and go to www.socialismconference.org, that's Socialism Conference, all one word, and you can look at registration information. The list of talks is up for the nearly finalized list of talks. Things always shift around a little bit at the last minute. And other logistics, I encourage you to go to www.socialismconference.org. And I think the conference is especially important this year. This will be, I've been going to conferences like this now for going on 25 years. And, you know, Malcolm X, when describing the international scene in 1965, said that it was, quote, a global rebellion of the oppressed against the oppressor, the exploited against the exploiter. And if we've seen anything here in our world in the last year and a half, really starting with New Year's of 2011, we've seen that battle really intensified, whether in Egypt, whether in the United States, whether in Canada, whether in, all over Europe and throughout the global South. So, you know, and after the devastation of the Great Recession that we've just had, those masses of people are discovering their own power to change the world. The Arab Spring gave birth to the global movement, and then the occupiers here revived politics of class struggle in the United States that we haven't seen for a couple of decades. And instead of the cutbacks, unemployment, and repression and austerity, as they call it, that our rulers are offering us, the solidarity and struggle shows that another world is possible. Each year, the Socialism Conference, as Alex said, brings together 1,500 activists from around the world, really, to speak about class struggle and debate strategies for building a better world. We would like to invite listeners of Illinois World Labor Hour to meet hundreds of others just like yourselves, that is committed fighters against a system of greed, racism, war, and oppression, and help us take the battle to the next step.
Excellent. And it's going on June 28th to July 1st up in Chicago at the Crown Plaza Hotel and Conference Center up there. And Alex was mentioning some of the many speakers that are going to be there. And you mentioned that you might have some folks from Greece, from the Syriza group over there.
For the listeners that don't know, Syriza is a coalition of different parties in Greece, anywhere from left, center left to radical left. And they are, there's an election in Greece this weekend, and they're currently leading the polls. We also are going to have talks about what happened in Wisconsin, and I think this is a good the Syriza is a good thing to counterpose against this because of the way the recall election happened in Wisconsin, with kind of subverting the original grassroots movement. The Democratic Party kind of subverted it, and to us, the Democratic Party is not really a real viable alternative. But Syriza is a good example of something that is worth voting for, because they're strongly opposed to austerity that is being handed down by European bankers and political elites to the Greek people. And they have pledged, if they're elected, to reject the memorandum that's been imposed on Greece by the Troika of the European Union, the European Central Bank, and the IMF. And so we're going to have activists that are members of Syriza that are on the front lines in Greece participating in that struggle. There's going to be two different talks on that for people to go and listen to if they want to learn more about that.
Yeah, I saw that one of the speakers might be Antonis Devanellos. I'm going to murder that name. And there was some interesting stuff where he said that first they'll stop the payments to the international and the local banks, to the IMF, the European Central Bank, and so on. We'll stop paying the debt. Second, he said that they will tax the rich in Greece, the corporations, and the wealthy. And third, he said that they must take public control of the banks, put the banks under democratic and workers' control. Interesting platform to run on in an election here.
And done very well, moved from 4% to up to 30% popularity by actually putting the blame where it belongs, which is on the wealthy and the bankers. And you'll see reflections of the crisis in Greece here in the United States banking situation. We were marveling earlier that the Greece tax problem is so bad that there are 4,000 rich individuals in Greece that if they would just cough up $5 million each in the back taxes they owe, that would be $23 billion going into Greece's public funds so that they could start to put people back to work and build the infrastructure that they've been cutting the last few years and put back workers' wages that they've cut up to 30% in recent austerity measures.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. That election is going on tomorrow in Greece?
Tomorrow.
And there was an election back in May. Is that when they had, Syriza had about the 30%, 35% approval?
So there's, you know, the parliamentary elections in Europe tend to run a little differently than they here in the United States. So they have their preliminary elections, and then if there's no clear victor, then they have runoff elections. So tomorrow's the runoff election. And then whichever party comes out on top, then tomorrow, if they don't have a clear majority, then has to form a coalition with other parties in Greece in order to rule the nation.
Yeah, hi, this is Bill Grill. And, basically that's because we just need to put on some kind of a spectacle to sort of act like we have democracy. And they really try and do it maybe better. What I'm wondering is, you guys are affiliated with the International Socialist Organization. Okay, now we know there's several little flavors of socialism and many disparate organizations. Like, what particular features of your, or I would say maybe your platform, distinguishes you from, say, I don't know, the Spartacists or the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, or whatever?
Excellent question, and thanks for putting me on the spot. I always appreciate that.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe you don't know the tendencies of
no.
The other parties.
I'm teasing. I've been around long enough.
Okay.
I think what's important about the ISO is, one, that as opposed to the DSA and folks of a more reformist nature, we understand that we can't make capitalism nicer. We actually have to get rid of capitalism, and workers, the people who actually produce the wealth in society, have to control it, how it's made, how it's distributed, so that we can distribute it equally and so that we actually have the power. And, you know, Wisconsin showed us a little bit of that power 18 months ago or less, when the unions and the grad students ran the Capitol. They had their own food. They had their own, you know, first aid stations. They had taken care of childcare. They didn't need Scott Walker. We have that power every day. We understand that that's a power that we have to use to organize society rather than allowing the status quo to continue, which is the 1% run society for their own benefit. We want a society that's run for the benefit of everyone. And then I think what's different about some of the other left groups that you might have mentioned is that we also understood what was in the Soviet Union from the rise of Stalin in 1927 up until the collapse in 1990 was state capitalism, was not socialism of any sort, but was a different kind of capitalism than we have in the West. Rather than you have open markets, you have the government controlling all profit and then fighting a war off and on, hot war, cold war with the United States in an arms race, using all the profits to build up its military. And so, given that, we understand that, you know, workers didn't have control in Russia, and that after 1927, and that's the difference, that we have a very clear understanding, I think, of what's needed. And again, it's workers' control of society. And that's the vast majority of us in this world. I mean, most of us work for a living, or we're trying to find jobs in this United States where there's five applicants for every one job.
Okay. I'm kind of wondering how does the ISO have sort of a blueprint on how such a society would work? I mean, what would have ownership? Would it be like workers' councils or go ahead and explain that.
Well, I never like to blueprint the future because that's going to be a decision that, as Engels said, that the people in the future make for themselves, and they're not going to care what we think. But I think given...
Oh, come on. Don't you worship founding fathers.
I'm a cautious guy. I don't bet much. But what I think we've seen from workers' revolutionary uprisings, whether it was Russia in 1917, whether it was the early part of the Spanish Civil War, whether it was the Portuguese Revolution, what we saw were workers' councils, where that started in the factories, but much more than unions, which sort of organized your rate of exploitation under capitalism, but true workers' councils that ran the factories and ran production. And I think that is where we have our greatest power, is in the workplace. And I think that's what's so inspiring about what's going on, what happened in Wisconsin, because it was the teachers who sicked out, went on an illegal sick out in Wisconsin, that helped spur that movement, that occupation of the Capitol. And what's so inspiring about the Chicago Teachers Union now, they're willing to take on, and stop production, if you will, if you look at education as production. And frankly, Rahm Emanuel does look at education as production, as a way to make profit. Him and his buddies who run the charter schools, they look at as production. And that is where we have our power, is to stop that sort of production. Or when the GEO went on strike here in 2009, or if we're pushed to that again with the way that the university is refusing to bargain with us on key issues in this contract, if that has to happen again, that is how we actually begin to show the power that we have to run society. And so I think, again, it's based on workers' councils and then democratically refiguring how we're going to run society. I mean, how hard is it really for us as people to make the decision, oh, yeah, we could use an energy-efficient mass transit system to get us anywhere in the United States? Because if you're here in Champaign, the Amtrak only runs one direction, north and south. You can't get east and west from here without going somewhere else. That's just silly. We all have to have individual cars. So why can't we have light rail to get us from here to Chicago in 45 minutes? We would all like that. We'd vote for it. We'd build it.
My house is actually on the track bed. I mean, no, my house isn't sitting on the track bed, but my property adjoins the old track bed for something called the Interurban, which ran, I believe, from Springfield to Danville several times a day. Now, I really am kind of glad I don't have a train running right in front of my house several times a day, but it's been possible. As a matter of fact, I did some research on transportation several years ago, going back and going through old newspapers and so on, and it's just amazing. Cars are what killed small towns. But anyway, that's kind of getting away from something there. Now, basically... somehow plan the economy on the way I'm looking at it is you take away the profit motive, and then perhaps we could plan things in a somewhat rational manner. However, we have to first probably agree on several principles. How would we do that? Do you have any ideas on that?
Well, like we said earlier, workers' councils, local community councils would be the basic unit of decision-making in the type of society that we would like to see. And so certain principles would need to be agreed upon before you could have any type of real change or progress. But I think, like you said, taking out the profit motive, it would be much, much, much simpler to have rational decision-making, and everyone truly would have a voice, not just the top 1% of people who control all the wealth in society. The wealth would be spread out, and so everyone would have an equal voice. And so those principles, discussions about these types of principles wouldn't be distorted by ulterior motives of profit. It would really be what's good for each individual community, what's good for each individual person, everyone would have a voice in determining these principles.
Okay, so we could have like more of a local community council kind of thing, and then their decisions all kind of work up through sort of a federation, more or less, and that sounds really good. What I'm looking for is, people always would kind of wonder, well, what would it be like, could we have NASCAR under in socialism. You know, I don't know. Or would you want NASCAR after we finally had it after a while? But I was wonder what daily life might even be like.
Well, I think those are some of the best questions that get discussed in the hallways at the Socialism Conference. So again, I
there
encourage
you go.
Folks
we'll come right back to that.
That's who want to come up to the Socialism Conference in 2 weeks. That's www.socialismconference.org. And these are some of the things that we love to talk about. We've got all the sessions on politics and the history of the labor movement and of women's rights and of gay rights and the new Jim Crow in the United States. But the things that we talk about in the bar afterward, when we're listening to the music and hanging out in the halls in between, are all these ideas that are spurred by the various sessions and talks of how to rebuild society so it makes sense and to tackle all the questions that Bill's been asking us today, and start that debate. Because not only do we need to understand our past and have a clear sense of politics, but as Bill rightly asks, is like, what would the future look like? Because we have to give people a vision of what that would look like. So as far as NASCAR or other entertainment, I think we'd see a flowering of the arts. I mean, Tom read his poem for us today, and as he does every week, but can you imagine what will happen to poetry and literature and art when the talents of 7 billion people are opened into the arts rather than just the few who can make the time now or the few who get paid for it?
Well, it's just incredible. You know, it's either starving or you're a gazillionaire.
Right. I mean, Wally Shawn, the actor, has come to the last couple Socialism Conferences.
And he said, I kept bumping into him all the time last year.
Great guy. And great thing he said 2 years ago was that there are billions of people on this planet doing work they're overqualified for. And that's exactly right. Under this system, under capitalism, most of our talents are wasted. And under a socialist system, our talents would blossom. Humanity would really come to the fore. And that's the sort of society we want to build. So please come to the conference and let's talk about it.
All right.
And once again, that conference is going on June 28th to July 1st at the Crown Plaza Hotel and Conference Center up around O'Hare in Chicago.
And we'll be carpooling from Urbana-Champaign, so if you want to ride, come and find me.
And that's like a Thursday through a Sunday?
Yep.
And you're going to have speakers there from all sorts of places, right? From Greece, from the Syriza people, from...
We're going to have people there from the Quebec Students Movement as well. And there's going to be a talk on the Egyptian Revolution, Which Way Forward. And also, I'd just like to quickly point out that the conference lasts 4 days, Thursday through Sunday, but people can come. They can come for all 4 days if they want, but you can also sign up for just 1 day or just come even for a single session if there's just one talk that you really want to hear, but you can't make the time for 4 days because I know that's a lot of time.
You'll be talking with some of the folks from Wisconsin and stuff regarding the recall election up there and the Quebec student strikes that are going on now. So you'll have representatives from there.
Yes, we will.
And here's several names on here that I recognize, like you mentioned Boots Riley earlier. Dan Georgakis. I know that name. Georgakis, okay, but I can't remember where I've seen him. David Zirin, you know, athletics. Paul D'Amato writes on Marxism.
Yes,
Richard Wolff, he's somebody that I've really seen a lot about lately. And by the way, he's got a website where he has he does a 1 hour, I believe, radio show of some type.
And I think for local flavor, it's important to point out that Dan Lane, one of the road warriors from the Decatur War Zone in 1994, is going to be at this year's Socialism talking about rebuilding a rank and file movement in the United States.
Yeah, he was there last year. I didn't make that. I only went to one thing there. I had a really good time meeting friends from Facebook. Right, that's really what I went for, and I had a good time doing that. And I went to some plenary thing, and I can't remember what it was now.
Well, there is lots of good face-to-face networking going on there, and that's really what activists need much more than the social networking. Is we need to get together and plan how to make the changes, and then go and occupy someplace and help to make those changes.
Yeah, like Leighton was saying about face-to-face networking, one thing that people that go to this conference always talk about being struck by is the energy that they experience. There's just such a sense of empowerment and energy with all these activists getting together. I think sometimes social movements kind of get caught in this sense of defeatism, but trust me, not at this conference. People really do believe that they can change the world, and that's what they're there to do.
But besides that, there's like hundreds of other people that are just having to stay at the hotel. What's these socialists?
I think the royal, one of the royal families from the Middle East was there last year. Don't quote me on that, but there are some really well-dressed people there. But again, we always look for unionized hotels, and we always check with the hotel unions before we book a place to make sure that no place is possibly going to be on strike or in the midst of negotiations. And so this is what was cleared for us this year. And so we're going to be out at the Crown Plaza, which is very conveniently one stop from O'Hare. So if you're flying in, it's one quick stop from O'Hare. And if you're driving up, lots of parking.
Yes. Very Excellent. Important.
Yes.
Because we don't have that nice light rail system.
Not yet.
But... Oh, there is something coming up. There's going to be an upgrade where I believe they can run trains at 110 miles an hour. I heard that reported the other day. But I want to see maglev trains and vacuum tunnels that take like hardly any energy. You know, that's something that I've really found, you know, through my life, you know, different from the 60s through the 70s, you know, and the 80s, just the whole sense of public enterprise where we do great things as a society. And it's sort of like the privatization of the culture, I mean, expressed through the culture and people really starting to think that way and live it. You know, I don't. When I was young in the 60s, like in grade school, it was like, wow, man, we're going to the moon and we're building these really great roads. And now it's down to, I don't know what to say.
Well, I mean.
I think they're saying go to this conference yes. and you're going to walk away with a bunch of energy and renewed enthusiasm.
Ideas,
yeah, ideas right. and stuff. I'm sure you folks walk away and you just have. Are really enthused at working on this stuff for the next month or two after that. It's got to just be a real energy boost, you know.
And we want to fight the privatization, globalization agenda that Clinton, Obama, Bush, and the leaders in Europe all represent. And I think this is a great chance for the people who are opposed to that sort of agenda to get together and start to build a bigger movement.
We'll see how this Greek election turns out tomorrow. That right. I know CNBC, has a special show going on Sunday night because they seem to think there's a lot of doom and gloom going to come out of this election over there in Greece.
Doom and gloom for the 1% possibly, yeah.
Exactly, exactly.
The bondholders.
So, yes, yes.
Oh, my God, they'd have to take a haircut. Shave them.
Anyway, you can once again visit the website is...
www.socialismconference.org.
And I see a phone number here, 773-583-7884. And it says free child care is available. So
we try to make it as accessible as possible. We hope you all come.
There you go. And that's once again June 28th to July 1st up in Chicago at the Crown Plaza Hotel and Conference Center. And we really want to thank our two guests, Leighton Christensen and Alex Cooney. Coming in here and talking, it's always fascinating to have you guys' ideas and thoughts here on this program. You're always welcome.
Well, thanks. We appreciate that, and we love coming.
Yeah, and stay tuned for Occupy the Airwaves here. Hopefully, Sean and Matt will get a whole show this week without any power outages and everything. And so